Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, I'm Amber Love of Vodka O'Clock Podcast at amberunmasked.com. Don't forget we're labeled as an explicit website and podcast. But, you know, that's not always the case. And one of the books that we're going to be talking about today is with my guest, Stephen Coughlin, who wrote Sanctuary, wrote an illustrated Sanctuary, and that's a pretty friendly book. I mean, there's I call it Disney version. Like, if you can handle the Lion King kind of violence, I think you'll be okay with Sanctuary. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, thanks for fitting this in now that you've moved clear across the country.
That was a trip.
I'm so sorry because, you know, you came from California to New Jersey, and that's like, I'm so sad for you because it should be the other way around.
I know. Where I'm so, I grew up in Connecticut, so I'm aware of your snowstorms. I remember them. I've tried to block them out of my memory, but I can feel them creeping up already on me.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's terrible. It's just terrible. Unless you're one of those extreme sports people, and then fine, but...
No, my extreme sports is when I fall asleep on the couch, and then at 2 o'clock in the morning, I have to get off of the couch and go into the bedroom. That's my extreme sport.
I consider that extreme.
Yeah.
I do. It occurs in the middle of the night.
Power.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you created Sanctuary quite a while ago, so give us the little pitch here about it. I know that the animals are anthropomorphized. It's been a while since I read it, but one of the things that really stuck in my head was how, even though they're animals and we have all different kinds of animals, they're very special and they have very human relationships, and the relationships was one of really the things that stood out for me the most. So... It was like every two pages I wanted to like snip a panel and tweet it and go, oh my God, this is just like what I say here. So where did Sanctuary come from and how did you come about creating it?
Sanctuary was a story that I came up with after watching the Jungle Book, the Disney movie, The Jungle Book. And I remember, I'm a big fan of the Nine Old Men of Disney era, and so I watch and rewatch a lot of those movies. And I was watching The Jungle Book, and when it ended, I remember sitting in there and thinking about what would happen next. And I was also thinking about what would happen if there was some kind of a story where... some kind of a way to incorporate like a murder mystery into it. And I'm a very big fan of Twin Peaks too. So I had always wanted to tell a story about a murder, but not necessarily a story about the murder, but about how people are affected by the murder. Because a good portion of Twin Peaks is just the people in the town of Twin Peaks reacting to the murder.
That's so funny that you bring that up. My mom, I've never seen the show. All I know is it's weird. Mm-hmm. My mom just started watching it because it's on Netflix. And every day when she's like marathoned a few more episodes, she's just like, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. And I'm like, I warned you. People told me about that Lynch fella.
Yeah. Well, I think I was in high school. I might have been a senior in high school when it came out. And I remember a lot of the weirder kids in school loving the show, and I think I had watched one episode and was like, this is the worst show I've ever seen. But as an adult, I appreciated it a lot more for what it was. So,
well, I do love what you hit upon where you said it's not that it's about solving the murder, it's about what happens to the towns, like the town and the people. It's sort of like I'm not a Walking Dead fan either because I don't like that kind of gore. But everybody that talks about The Walking Dead says it's really not about the zombies. It's about how the people are affected by the zombies, how the people are, you know, turn on each other. And
yeah.
It sounds like it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, The Walking Dead isn't really a story about, like, people fighting zombies. It's about, like, people living with zombies, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Sanctuary is about... there is a murder that takes place, but it happens very... very quickly into the story, and then from that point on, it's about how the animals and the scientists who are watching them, you know, react to that murder and what happens to them afterwards. So and I incorporate, you know, real character emotions into a lot of the animals. I want them to be upset. I want them to be angry. I want them to have friends and loved ones and just to see, you know, what I can do with the book and take it from that point on.
Well, one of the things that was on in like the first few pages that I picked up on was how you have really defined gender roles, even among, like, you know, we're talking about animals, and of course, you know, when you study the animal kingdom, sometimes we take from the science community their information about gender roles as it pertains to the animals. Like, you know, people used to believe that birds were monogamous. Now people are now they're saying they're not.
Right.
You know, when I watch the birds that nest in the columns in our house, the dads, like all the dads help out the moms with the caretaking of the baby. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And so I remember reading Sanctuary that, like, you have the pandas and the giraffes and the gorillas, and you all have it very specific with how the species are. They're worried about reproduction and.
I wanted them to have a lot of the a lot of human issues to move the story along, but more importantly, in volume two, you know, the story, it moves on into to explain a lot more of why these animals have human emotions and why they're jealous and why they're angry and why they're, you know, curious and more importantly, why they can understand each other when they talk to each other. So I'm not saying that the book is based in any type of reality where they, you know, where they're friends with each other, where all animals are friends with each other. But a lot of that stuff gets explained later on in the series. And I one through seven was volume one, and I think I explained a lot of why the animals were so angry, and volume two is going to go a lot further into the animals showing more human emotions and really getting pissed off.
Okay, because there's when we talk about Sanctuary, and I don't know if this is why you named it that way, but these particular this grouping of animals, they're in this zoo environment. So we're not referring to the lions and tigers that are, you know, like the Lion King, where they were portrayed as being out in their, in, you know, native environments. This is an isolated area,
right? Which they believe to be their native habitat,
right? So and there's some that were there before, right? And it's you know, so there's human interference with this particular group of animals, and I remember the a little minor spoiler. I remember the microchips in the little critters that make them explode.
Well, some of the animals are contagious, because a lot of the animals that are in the book are being experimented on, and whether it's by infecting them with diseases or screwing around with their heads. Some of the more contagious ones are kept separate from the ones that are out in the habitat. So the gorillas are kept in a very strict and very closed off setting from the rest of the other animals. And the giraffes, who are not, you know, infectious, are free to roam, and the tigers and lions are free to roam, but that doesn't mean that they're not also being tested on. So
I loved the giraffes' relationships. You know, like how I was talking before about how the relationships were important, where you have one male giraffe that's the you know, angry, macho, abusive type, and then you have another male giraffe that's a different personality,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and the female giraffe in the middle of this triad. I found that interesting because it was something where that was more, I guess a lot of people argue about whether or not animals have personalities.
Yeah.
I see that they do. I mean, because I've owned cats my whole life, and I've had very different cats.
Well, you can go on YouTube and watch hundreds and hundreds of videos of, you know, pandas or apes, you know, losing a child or a loved one and just being depressed and sad and, you know, lonely. And
it really is, yeah.
There's no way you can watch that and tell me that they're not really feeling anything or that the feelings that they're going through are just, you know, ape emotions and then rolling your eyes. But, I mean, animals that have feelings and I find it hard to believe that there's any type of mammal that's out there that doesn't, you know, feel pain or fear or excitement. And so I kind of want to tap into that a little bit.
Well, it's funny because we have another cat in the house now. So my old female cat, my princess, who had, you know, she finally got to be an only cat again because we had moved in here and there was a cat. So so she was really enjoying, you know, having her solitude again because that's what she was used to before.
Mm-hmm.
And then this little kitten comes in. And it's just like havoc to her. He's like, he wants to, you know, like come up and play and smack her and all this stuff. And she's just like, wants no part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's just so funny to see that. And that's why there's a new comic, by the way. I will plug this for, I don't know the creators, but it's from Action Lab and it's Hero Cats. Oh my God. It is like the best new comic on the regular market because it's all these different cats with personalities. And of course they, you know, there's always the joke that cats are secretly plotting to take over the world anyway. You know, animal books obviously I think are hilarious because they, especially for kids, like there's this like subtle lessons learned thing.
Yeah.
But then it's not only for kids. Did you read Brian K. Vaughan's Pride of Baghdad?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. That was like, oh my God! Heartbreaking. Holy jeez, that book.
It's scary, and it's. I'm sure that he wrote it as something, as kind of a adventure story, but it certainly doesn't, you know, end up as a fun adventure story.
Yeah, not a kid's book.
So I recommend it to kids who love animals.
Yeah. But that's one of the rare cases where I can think of where it was, you know, an animal book geared towards adults.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else.
Now,
By the way, nobody has really gotten, who's read Sanctuary. I haven't gotten one piece of email yet. I'm a big fan of Back to the Future. That was my favorite movie when I was a kid. And the three giraffes are named George, Biff, and Lorraine.
Oh. Yeah, no, I totally didn't get that. I just thought Biff
right
was
over everybody's heads, and Biff is the bully, and Lorraine
is
the male, and George is the weak guy who
gets beat up.
He doesn't have the courage to face up to Biff.
Oh, wow. Nice Easter egg. I can't believe, I mean, I wouldn't expect, you know, that I would have ever picked that up, but usually people are pretty rabid about Easter eggs.
Yeah, exactly. I think somebody from high school Facebook messaged me and said, oh my God, that's from Back to the Future. And I said, you're the one. I'm going to send you a candy bar.
Nice. So you got to be the writer and the illustrator for this. So what's your history and background of studies there? Where did you learn how to do all that?
I graduated high school in 92 and I got accepted to the Ringling School of Art and Design in Sarasota, Florida. And I was there for 2.5 years and then I transferred back up to Connecticut, where I grew up, and I went to the Pear College of Art for 4 years. And during my fourth year, I got hired by Highlights for Children magazine, and I worked with them for a year and a half, and then I got disgruntled, and I kind of quit drawing for, I want to say like 9 years. And then and when I moved out to California with my wife, that's the first thing I did was start drawing again. And then I just happened to see an ad for the writer's workshop going on at Slave Labor Graphics. And I went down there and pitched them the idea, and they loved it.
It's heartbreaking to think that any time with Highlights for Children would make you disgruntled, because it's just the most awesome publication for kids. You know.
Well, the problem that I had with Highlights, it wasn't the workload or the people or anything. I loved working for them, and I loved doing all that stuff. The problem was that they don't sign people to long-term contracts because they want cheaper and cheaper artists right out of school to come through. And so I only worked with them for a year and a half, and then I asked for more money, and they said nope.
Yeah, it's like that everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not just an art thing.
But I had a hard time finding work quickly after that, and then every job that I took was, every art job that I took, I kept on thinking, well, how am I going to get health insurance?
I can relate. As a non-art person, I can even relate.
Yeah. So I got a job working in the mental health system as a case manager, I've been working for the past 7 years with people diagnosed with bipolar disorder and paranoid schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorders.
That's it, like the most non-art thing I can think
of.
Yeah,
there's no art.
unless you were doing like art therapy as like
I did art therapy for a couple months. They let me teach a class, a workshop, and we did art therapy, and then it was hard to keep on. There was no money going into the class, so it was hard to buy supplies, and we ran out of supplies after I think about 6 months, and it was disappointing, but. But it was a fun experience.
I know that there's, I believe he's British, or perhaps something in the UK. Daryl Cunningham is a cartoonist who also worked in a similar kind of facility for a very long time, and he wrote a book, one of his books that I really loved is called Psychiatric Tales. And it's a fascinating look where he shows you his view as I think he was a nurse and yet a cartoonist, and I don't even think he considered himself a cartoonist back then.
Mm-hmm.
Documenting the lives of these people.
Yeah.
You know, like this, how he found somebody on the street who was like this very talented musician with this terrible, debilitating mental illness that couldn't get help or was unable to get help, didn't want it. The type of musician that could have been really, really famous, and instead he was, you know, like homeless and just had a guitar and, you know, this crazy, seemingly sad life to somebody else, and died very, you know, young. And it's the sort of thing that somebody who can document that, whether you're a filmmaker or an illustrator, writer.
I was working at one specific program for a while, and there was a young girl named Jill that was there, and we had started talking one day because we found out that we both grew up in Connecticut, and she was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. And I had asked her what her story was, and she had said that when she was 17, that she started to hear choirs singing wherever she went. And she got really scared and started to hear voices telling her that her family hated her and that she should run away. And And eventually she just gave in to the voices and ran away. I think she was around 17 at that time. And the family had wrote her off as being, after a year or two, as being missing. And then the police told them to declare her deceased. And 7 years went by, and she traveled across the entire country. She walked from Connecticut to California, and she walked into a homeless shelter in California, just north of Los Angeles. And there was a woman that was working at the secretary that was working behind the desk that recognized her as being somebody that looked just like her friend in Connecticut's daughter. And so she asked her, "Is your name Jill?" And Jill said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh my God, I have to call your mom right now." And she called, and they managed to get Jill to a hospital and get her on medications and reunite her with her family again. But she chose to stay in California. But I was sitting there listening to the story, saying, I can't even imagine the statistics for that. Like, what are the chances that you would travel from Connecticut to California and then run into the one person probably living in California that knows your mom?
That's remarkable.
You know? So I had sat down with her and I said, "This might be like an awesome story to make into a graphic novel or something." And she said, "If you want to use it, that's fine." So we met weekly for a couple months and talked, and I wrote down some stuff, and I drew out some pages, and she loved it all. And then she relapsed, and she was in the hospital for a couple of weeks. She had tried to commit suicide, and then she was released again, and then she relapsed again. And a couple of weeks later, she had called me and said that she just wasn't feeling right about having her story be out there. So it was heartbreaking, you know, just because we were friends and because we had put so much, you know, work into the project. And, you know, out of respect for her, I closed the case on it. And that was the last time I talked to her.
Aw, that's so sad.
Yeah.
It is something that I've seen similar kind of fictional stories done.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very short-lived TV show called Mental, set in a mental health facility. Or I think it was just like actually the particular department of a bigger hospital. And that was a very similar story to what the main character was going through. His sister had disappeared, and he had hoped to one day find her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary. I mean, a lot of I had asked her, "What'd you do for 7 years?" And she said, "I just walked." And I said, "Yeah, but how did you, like, did you sleep, you know, at shelters? Like, did you sleep?" And she said, "Sometimes for a few days in a row, I just slept in the bushes. You know, I just walked off the side of the road into the trees in a bush." And I said, I can't even wrap my brain
I can't imagine
around walking on the side of the road, and then you're tired, and then you just go into a bush, and you...
Yeah.
She's very nice, and there are a lot of people like that that have interesting stories, and we always joke around at the programs, you know, somebody should write a book about this stuff. So.
One of the reasons that I wanted to ask you, that I had asked you about your background in learning to write is because... the way that you pace the stories, and you always have a cliffhanger at the end of each issue.
Mm-hmm.
What's your process for plotting that out? Do you make like a big outline with page breakdowns and stuff?
Yeah, I have a sketchbook, and I always carry around my sketchbook with me wherever I go. And I do page breakdowns, and Like when I wrote all of the volume one, I kind of just did a basic outline of what has to happen in each issue, and then I take the individual issue and do, I'll write the script first, and then break the script down into pages, and then sketch out my pages in the sketchbook, and for more detailed drawings, I'll do a sketch of what is going to go onto the page first, and then eventually everything just gets transferred onto the page. But I'm not it's a digital comic, but I'm not. I still do pencil on paper. You know, I have boxes and boxes full of comic book paper. So I still prefer to do pencil on paper.
So because you're basically the like a one-man show operation, when you were originally with a publisher and then took the book out, and it's just under your own banner now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do the writing, the penciling, and the inking, and then I still have Jordan doing my coloring for me, and then Jeff does my lettering, so.
Okay.
But I do the covers, too, and I'm talking with people right now about possibly turning it into a web comic, or just creating a website for the book.
I think that would work. I think it would work well for a web comic. People are adapting easier to it than they used to.
Well, I'm productive too. I mean, I work a lot on the pages, and I do have stuff I can show. You know, somebody had said if you do a web comic, you have to be able to post stuff weekly. You know, at least weekly, so
right.
That people can bookmark it, and then. You know, every Thursday or whatever, if that's the day that you post stuff, then they go on and see what it is that you did. And I do one or two pages a week, so I do have stuff that I can post.
So then what is your revision process like? Do you find that because you also do the layouts and everything yourself that you really don't have to worry about revisions? Or like when somebody's lettering, do they come back to you and say, you know, maybe these words need to be condensed a little bit?
Yeah, that's Jeff primarily. I mean, Jeff does my lettering and my editing. So when I write a script, I'll sketch out some pages for him and then give him the script for the issue. And then he'll kind of come back to me and say, whoa, you know, this character is not supposed to be here at this time. And, you know, you can't give this away if this character doesn't know yet. And so he's busted me a couple times on the continuity issues that come up. But it's nothing that, you know, I can't change quickly. I don't think he's ever caught me doing anything wrong, you know, when I've completed a page. Like, and then I have to go back and draw the whole thing over again. Like, I've never had to do that. So I've been lucky in that regard.
It's so helpful, though, when somebody finds a big, you know, whether it's big or small mistake like that. I had somebody beta read my script, and she was remarkable. It just, you know, with pointing out some things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, okay, well, if she walked out of the room here, you know, what part of her is showing? Is she showing in the doorway then when she, you know, has this dialogue? Like, what's, you know?
Yeah.
It was really helpful. And I guess, because I'm always, like, my approach is more like, let the artist, you know, do what they want and figure it out. Yeah. That way that it's theirs and they know where to put people and they know what makes sense and they like to, you know, have layout. Like, I don't want to tell an artist really how to lay anything out.
Yeah.
And but I guess it's there are cues that should be there that I tend to miss.
I know, as the writer, you always think, well, I wrote the story, now you take it, and somebody else take it. You know, I wrote it. Well, my job here is done. But you don't realize sometimes when the editor comes back to you and says you're not done. You know, the whole thing is a work in progress until it actually comes out. And that's the way I feel about each individual issue. Like, I go back and forth with Jordan on coloring, you know, things, and I go back and forth with Jeff on lettering things, and he's, you know, emailing me a lot while he's lettering saying, did you mean to say this? And, you know, is this character supposed to say this? And is it supposed to go in this panel and not in this one? And
well, I've even found... Yeah, I mean, comics are one thing because it's usually, at least with the bigger publishers, they're so regular about getting them out. Sometimes it's a speed issue and you miss some of the copy editing. Mm-hmm. But I've caught in, like, paperbacks, you know, they've obviously been through like a hardcover and then get a paperback, and I'll find a mistake in a, you know, mystery novel or something where they refer to the completely wrong character name or something, and I'm like, how did nobody find this?
I saw it once in a Batman issue not that many years ago. It was during the Batman rest in peace, the RIP storyline, and there was a word balloon that was attached to Batgirl. And somebody was talking to her, and they called her Robin, and she responded to it. And I remember reading it going, this is like the number one book,
yeah,
you know, the highest selling book. And I can't believe nobody saw that.
I saw one time in the inside page where they, this particular publisher would put their credits for their staff, all the, you know, the from writer to the production people, and then they have their copyright notice and stuff. Mm-hmm. That they didn't actually have the names in, like they had all the, it was all the graphic style, so it was like the font with the, you know, yellow to orange gradient, you know, letters and stuff like that, but all it said was name here. Like, artist, name here, letterer, name here. Like, oh, God, what did you do?
I know. How many people look at that before it goes to press, too?
That's what I said, too. I'm like, how many people, how many desks did this go across?
Yeah. Everything looks great.
I mean, you know, but it's just, it's funny because mistakes do happen. I mean, there's, I'm on Twitter a lot, and there's a lot of big company brand name mistakes, mm-hmm, that happen, and sometimes they're really smart about it and acknowledge it right away and apologize right away, mm-hmm, and other times they like disappear off Twitter for the next 2 years. It's like, it's like, you know, there's just a mistake, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's just words in our alphabet that, you know, it was just something dumb. Let it go.
Well, last year, I'm not a big wrestling fan, but last year there was a big controversy because there was a wrestler that quit. Like, he just walked off of WWE.
Okay.
And as far as I knew, he was fired and stuff. And yesterday I was in the Halloween party store. You know, they just started opening up those all around the place.
Yeah, they
and there was a whole bunch of his merchandise that was there in the party store, and it was like grab bags and, you know, those like you party favors where you blow into them and it makes like a, you know, weird sound, and it was, the whole section was just him, like his face was on everything, and I remember thinking, I don't know if he's supposed to be on the cover of all these things.
Well, yeah, somebody just, I think it was on Gizmodo, that there was a shipment error and the gummy bear packages were all filled with gummy penises. It's like, whoops. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little mistake. Okay. You just gotta own up and go, God damn, yeah, whoops.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Move on.
We screwed that up.
So, but, you know, talking about these silly mistakes and stuff, what is the lesson? Have you learned any, like, big major lesson in the comic book business that you want to share with the listeners?
You know, when I first started working for SLG, I was under the – I had never done a comic before, and I had never worked with a comic book publisher before. And I was under the impression that – you know, if you had a really great idea and you had a good story and some decent artwork, that that people would go out of their way to help make sure that that project happens. And the thing I found the most since I started working at SLG is that you have to make it happen yourself. Like, nobody's going to help you,
you know,
when you're starting at the bottom. No one's going to help you to make sure this project happens, that with your name on the cover of it, you're responsible for everything. You know, you're responsible for promoting and, you know, getting your name out there and making sure that people buy your book making sure that the quality of the book is up to your own standards, and you know, getting your own team together of colorist and letterer and editor, and going out there and you know, meeting people and just marketing. And I think that's been the part that I've learned the most, because I was really naive when I first started, and I thought, why isn't anybody helping me if they like this idea? You know, why is my face not on the cover of, you know, the SLG website, you know, if they like me so much? And you just realize that you're a small fish, you know, in the big ocean, and you just have to keep on working at it, and meeting new people and introducing yourself, and, you know, showing work, and just trying to get as many people, you know, to look in your direction as you can.
And that's, I'm sure, true for all of the small press type things. I mean, when it comes to paying for tables at shows, you have a publisher, it doesn't mean that the publisher is going to do any of that for you.
They're
basically printing and distributing, and you know, sometimes that's it.
Well, that's really all that Dan Vado is that he's the guy that says, okay, yeah, I'll publish it. You know, I'll slap the SLG logo on it. And, you know, I like this enough to put the SLG stamp on it. So, and, you know, and he's invited me to shows, and, you know, he's been really nice about getting me, you know, a seat at comic conventions and, you know, paying for my pass. And, you know, I was at San Diego, this past San Diego, Comic-Con, and I think that was the last time I saw him. And, you know, it's been great. I didn't really market myself all that much at previous conventions, but at the San Diego one, I went around, and Chris Wisney, his wife Elizabeth, Chris Wisney does Monstrosis, but she went around during her lunch break with me and introduced me to a whole bunch of people that I never would have introduced myself to before. Like I got to eat lunch with Joshua Dysart, who does Harbinger and for IDW, and I got to meet Scott Shaw, who does the Simpsons comics, and Sergio. I met him that does Gru, and it was just really exciting. I was a little starstruck the whole time, because I wouldn't have just gone around and introduced myself, you know, normally. But she was kind of holding my hand the whole time, like pulling me forward, going, "Introduce yourself, you know, say hi." So it was really helpful.
So then, is Slave Labor Graphics going to be the home for Sanctuary for the next volume?
I don't know. You know, they do a list of books that they're going to publish, and I mean, I've only completed issue eight and nine so far. Issue 10, I'm going to do something kind of strange with it, because I continue to want to try different things with the book. If nobody's going to tell me it's a bad idea, then I just want to go ahead and do it. But I want to try and make an issue 10 that's free. And issue 10 is going to be the backstory. It's going to be four different, actually, it's going to be five different five-page flashbacks to some of the characters in the stories and how they got to be at the Sanctuary. And I'm going to do it in different artists' styles.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I have one of the stories is about how there's a plane that crashed in the Sanctuary in one of the stories. And I'm going to explain how the plane crashed there and who crashed it and how they got trapped there. And I'm going to draw it in the style of Edward Gorey.
I love that art. That's so cool.
And then I have a Chuck Jones. I love Chuck Jones, who did all the Warner Bros. Cartoons. And I'm going to do something with the gorillas that's going to look very much like a Chuck Jones cartoon. But it'll be silent. There'll be no dialogue in it, and it'll explain how they came to be inside the facility, And then I'm going to do something with Dr. Odette too. There's an artist who did This Way San Francisco, and it was a children's book that I've always loved, and so I'm going to do it in the style of that book. It's going to take place in San Francisco too.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one, what that looks like, but definitely know the other two styles.
Yeah, you'd recognize it if you saw it. It was a very popular kids' book. It's got a picture of people riding a trolley on the front of it.
Aw. Well, San Francisco, of course.
Yeah.
So now your life is completely different, and you're not working in the mental health industry,
yeah.
And you get to raise your son, right?
Yeah.
And so what do you do to relax? Is there such a thing? Because you're kind of doing, you know, the important job of taking care of a little person that,
yeah,
like, relies on you.
Yeah,
and
he's almost two. He'll be two the first week in November. Relaxing. Oh, my God.
Do you relax? I don't know. Or do you just wait till he's down and then, like, is that when you draw? Like, I don't understand these people that work until, like, you know, 2 in the morning.
Well,
I say this all the time. Like,
he's up at 5:30 in the morning, and my wife wakes up with him, and then I'm up at around 6:15. And sometimes I'll try and draw when he takes a nap, but usually I kind of clean the house or do chores at that time. And then he's asleep in bed at 7. So from 7 till, you know, 10 or 11, I'll sit and work and draw and that's probably what I'm mostly doing now.
So now, to, like, wrap some things up, let's have some fun. If there was a fictional place where you could go, Stephen, where would you go?
Where I would go to what?
If there was a fictional place that you would want to go to, where would you want to visit?
Fictional place?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Most of them end up being, like, having you know, weird wars. Like, I thought Hogwarts would be awesome, but then I thought, you know, Hogwarts got destroyed.
you mean pre-movies?
Yeah, like, you know, earlier Hogwarts sounds pretty awesome.
I mean, I've read fantasy novels before, so I mean, a lot of those places look really beautiful, and I, you know, I like science fiction movies, so I'm sure other planets, you know, that you'd be able to go to are sound really nice too. I don't know where I would go to. I think you really stumped me.
Oh my
I think
goodness.
I'd want to go to someplace inside of, like, a cartoon, maybe. You know, some, like, beautiful.
You know
what I watched recently on Netflix? The original 1960s Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, my God.
And I loved it so much because they were going in and out of books.
Oh, that's neat.
You know, they were walking. Sometimes they would show the page flip and they would walk to the next page and then jump into the scene. And, you know, they were in the 100-acre woods, and it's all beautiful there, you know, painted by the 9 Old Men artists. And it just looked really beautiful. So I think I'd probably want to walk through the 100-acre wood, you know, and meet Winnie the Pooh and Tigger and stuff.
That sounds really nice.
Yeah.
That's not so bad. See, you figured it out.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I wouldn't want to end up on Hoth or anything from Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, you moved back to New Jersey, and that's exactly what last winter was.
I'll look out for the snow troopers walking through.
Honestly, I mean, like, so many of the streets couldn't get done. Like, my streets couldn't get done, and everybody would be saying, oh, but it's perfectly fine. I'm like, well, good for you. I can't get out my driveway. Which I didn't understand, because I live on a street where there's, like, the road department and police department and stuff like that. I'm like, I would think that our street would be done first.
Yeah. Well, next to the Montclair High School, so I have to assume that they want kids to go to school. So
yeah.
Shovel, you know, go plow that road.
Yeah. So welcome back to Hoth.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Sorry. So while you're working, do you have anything playing in the background, or is it like a specifically solitude piece kind of time for you?
I'm watching Young Justice right now on Netflix.
Ooh, neat. I didn't know that was on Netflix.
Yeah, it's available now. I think the first season is available. So I've been watching that, and yeah, I do put on movies. For the most part, I like watching TV shows, just because they're short and I don't have to really pay that much attention to them. I don't pick shows that I like. I pick shows that I've seen, 100 times before. So
while
I was doing issue 9, like I watched almost the entire 9 season run of Cheers.
Nice.
And then in the past, when I was wrapping up issue 9, I think I watched 3 seasons of Family Ties, which still holds up. I thought it was a pretty good show.
That's good. Yeah, I'll do that too. I'll put Psych on or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not playing music, then I'll turn the TV so that I can kind of see it, even though I'm not really looking at it.
Yeah.
But I'll do the same thing. I just play the same shows like over and over again that I'm not really paying attention to.
I feel a little embarrassed sometimes because I won't even realize how long I've been drawing, and then I'll go through the Netflix recently watched list, and it shows like 17 episodes of Family Ties in a row. I'm like, oh my god,
you worked a lot. Oh man.
And then you walk around the whole day, like for days afterwards, going, singing, "What would you do, baby?"
I know. I've been marathoning new shows, though. Like, I've been vegging out and actually trying to find new things because I'm like, oh my god, I really. If Monk was on Netflix, I'd be really doomed because there are certain box sets that I have like gone through completely: Psych, Monk, and House,
yeah,
and the Batman animated series,
yeah,
and Castle. So at least with Netflix, I'm trying to discover shows that like everybody else knew about 10 years ago. Like, I just started watching Revenge and Numbers.
Right. Yeah, those are great shows to binge watch because you don't really have to get that invested in them.
Yeah.
You could just sit down and just relax and do something else while it's on. It's like CSI.
Yeah, and
CSI. You don't have to sit in front of the TV much.
I mean, it's like I always have my phone open anyway, and I'm on Twitter, and I'll be like, oh, wait, who the hell did they do? What would they just do? How did they figure that out? It's like, oh, yeah, I was on Twitter. So where can people find you on the web? Like, I'm, constantly talking about Twitter and because I'm just there. I don't know. I try to really pay attention to other life. But that's where I end up. So I'm at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter.
I see a lot of your posts. You actually have a lot of things to say. I don't have that much to say. So I don't post.
Aww.
But yeah, I'm at Coughlin Steven on Twitter. And I'm on Facebook. And Sanctuary is on Amazon. And the SLG site changed. It used to be slgcomic.com, and now it's slgpubs.com. And, barnesandnoble.com has it, and it's coming out on paperback at the end of December. So it'll actually be distributed through Diamond, so it'll be available everywhere.
Oh, that's excellent news.
Yeah.
And then
8 and 9 are done, and I think they're waiting for me to start working on 10 to release them. So,
do you have plans to – I know that you were talking about building a website for the pages that you've already had done, but do you know if you're going to take it to Comixology, or will Slave Labor take it to Comixology?
I don't know because I don't –
I'm not really sure how that works at that,
I haven't talked to SLG in a while, so I don't know what the plans are for us to continue making Sanctuary. I know that I think I have a green light to continue making it with them, but I'd really love to try the webcomic stuff because I want to make like an interactive Sanctuary website. you know, I want to put a map of the place in there so people can understand what it looks like, you know, from up above. And I want, you know, character profiles and bios, and then I'll be able to take those flashback things and put those in there too. So if you want to cheat and look and see how that character got into the sanctuary, you can, you know, before reading where the story has gone, you can do that. And I just want to make it a fun experience and be able to give people content, you know, on a weekly basis. So that's really I'm thinking about at the moment.
Okay. That's definitely offers more than just reading a digital comic.
Yeah.
The way that we think of, although some people have been figuring out how to incorporate soundtracks and things like that. I think they're just doing it on the side, like, you know, here's the list of songs. And
well, there was,
you know,
a big company, I can't recall their name, but at San Diego, and they were interested in competing against Comixology with motion comics, and the stuff that they had was amazing. Like, it just looked amazing. They had sound effects and I was blown away. But I think somebody at SLG had was talking about turning their comic into a motion comic.
That's a lot of production work,
yeah.
I imagine. So I it's probably really costly and time consuming to go that route.
Well,
but
I would assume you'd have to charge a lot too for the comic. And Sanctuary comics are just 99 cents each. So it's, you know, I hate to jack up the price. But.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I'm, you know, hope you can keep the team together and keep it going.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was great, the issues that I got to read, folks. So, you know, run out there and look it up and see if you can get it.
Yeah.
Are you going to do any more shows for the rest of the year?
I'm going to the Clifton, New Jersey show on Sunday.
Okay.
To meet some people. And then whatever cons are coming up, you know, in the area, I'll probably sneak out there for those. I don't know if I'll do a table. I'd like to just go and introduce myself as a Jersey local artist and see what kind of people I can meet and just go from there. But I'm sure we will probably run into each other, being, you know, fellow Jerseyites.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, you're invited to come down and bring your toddler to Superhero Weekend in October.
I know, that sounds really exciting. He has many superhero-themed clothing items.
That's perfect. So we have a lot of kids come out, and we have, I think our usual 501st Legion, what they're doing this year is they're going to do their 501st Star Wars things on like one day, and on a different day they're also the same guys who do G.I. Joe.
Oh.
So they're going to do like G.I. Joe one day and do Star Wars one day. And some people are working on some new superhero outfits. So we've got some Avengers and X-Men planned. And we've got some Doctor Who costumes that I know people are planning.
And I would assume that you're going to be dressed up too.
Yeah, I was trying to work that out. I just finished an outfit yesterday. Today I broke my sewing machine. So I finished the sewing part of an outfit yesterday. And I'll probably wear that because it's also the one that's going to New York Comic Con.
Okay.
And then for the second day, I'm usually Wonder Woman. And I don't know if I'm going to break out the Adam Hughes version that I wore for Free Comic Book Day, or if I'm going to go back to the Bombshell version. I'm not sure. Or if I'm just going to pick something else that maybe would be new.
Right.
Like I've got some like that I just I was trying to sell, and I haven't sold them yet. So I'm thinking maybe I can wear one of those instead. I don't know. So I have not committed fully to seeing if I'm going to be Wonder Woman this year. It would be the first time that I'm not, though.
I know. I can only imagine you as Wonder Woman, so it would be nice to see something else.
Yeah, so I'm just not sure. I'm just in such an iffy place.
Okay.
But hopefully everything works out. I need to get some last-minute stuff for my new outfit, for the new Marvel outfit.
Mm.
And, hopefully, gosh, it's you know, it's always unpredictable in New Jersey whether October is going to be really nice or snow or whatever. But it's October 4th and 5th in Flemington at Comic Fusion, and we have a ton of people. We're going to have some really great guest artists too. Joe Caramanga has agreed to come one of the days. Charles Wilson, Sarah Donner is going to come sing one of the days. So I've got a lineup of the guests, and people can always look up on amberonmass.com and on Vodka O'Clock Tumblr and on Facebook. You can find us if you type in Comic Fusion Superhero Weekend. You'll find our event page there, and that has the guest list and everything. So we've had so many volunteers this year, thank goodness. They've been like really helping out so much. And hopefully we'll raise lots and lots of money for Safe and Hunterdon again.
Yeah, that's great. I just mailed out my my art piece.
Cool. The first time we're going to have one of your pieces, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So I hope we see you there.
Yeah, so we will try to definitely make it. I mean, my weekends are open now.
Yeah.
Since I'm unemployed.
Yeah, me too. Okay. Well, everybody, thanks so much for listening, and go follow Stephen Coughlin and get Sanctuary, and we'll see you soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.